Welcome to this episode of the Medicinal Herbs Podcast from Holistic Matters. In this episode, guest Dr. Marisa Marciano is back to talk with Dr. Dana Parent about the common clinical conditions and concerns she sees in her practice and the medicinal role played by herbs. Some of the most common issues Dr. Marciano addresses with her patients involve stress, hormones, and digestion.
Hello, and welcome to the Medicinal Herbs Podcast from Holistic Matters. I'm your host, Dr. Dana Parent, and this month, naturopathic doctor and herbalist Dr. Marisa Marciano is back as our guest to talk with us about common conditions she sees in her clinical practice where herbs can be particularly beneficial. Welcome back, Marisa.
Thanks so much, Dana. Very happy to be here and to get to chat more about herbs with you.
And I am so excited today because today we're going to be talking about some common conditions and talk about the herbs specifically that you use in clinical practice.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to sharing some of my greatest successes with herbs have been, and hopefully that can help some of the practitioners out there too.
Awesome. Well, let's go ahead and get started. Can you talk about some common clinical conditions or concerns that you see in practice very commonly?
Sure. So probably the number one thing that I'm addressing in almost every patient visit is stress, as I'm sure many other practitioners out there can agree. That's usually at least a piece of what's going on. So stress obviously manifests so differently for different people. And one of the beautiful things when you dive into herbal medicine is you can start to see which herbs kind of fit different pictures of stress, whether that stress can look more like, you know, someone who can't fall asleep at night, or somebody who is, you know, experiencing more anxiety with their stress, or more low mood, or kind of dysthymia, up and downs, irritability, lots of different things. And it's one of those things, I think, also that a lot of people come to us and they almost don't even, they don't think there's really anything that can be done about it. And, or at least, you know, they may have tried medications and things to help manage things like anxiety that just like haven't panned out well. So herbs are such a useful part of that piece of practice, I think, and can be so, so useful. So stress, insomnia, that kind of nervous tension and nervous exhaustion is something that we see in the kind of older herbal literature and texts that's spoken about. And I think really paints that those two words together, I think paint a really good picture about what a lot of people are feeling, really tired, but also, you know, the tired and wired kind of picture is quite common. So I find myself treating a lot of that. And then, that obviously can impact many different conditions, from heart disease to autoimmune to digestion, like so many things. Yeah.
Awesome. And then what about some specific herbs? Do you want to talk about some specific herbs that you use in patients when they come in and they are exhibiting this stress, anxiety, and insomnia picture? And, you know, what herbs you're using and kind of what their traditional use has been and how you're using them in clinical practice.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think before I even like get into, and I'm happy to provide individual herbs, but I'll just provide a really short disclaimer about, you know, whoever's listening right now, just knowing that it's really important that you work within your scope of practice or with somebody who's qualified as a healthcare practitioner. You should not be self-diagnosing. You need, you know, especially if you're going to be employing some of these herbs for the very first time, you really want to be working with someone who can monitor you appropriately. That's very important. And, you know, it's very tempting to just kind of match a herb to a condition and call it a day, but it is more nuanced than that, of course. And there's always the potential for even some of our safest herbs to cause adverse reactions or to be potential drug interactions. So yeah, just kind of keeping that in mind as we go forward. I want to just mention that, and that the severity of these conditions, obviously there's such a spectrum. Herbs are fantastic at treating that sort of mild to moderate area of our conditions. They can be used in more advanced states of disease, but you know, again, kind of staying within our scope and is really important here. So I just want to highlight that first. But yes, let's talk about some individual herbs. I'm going to start with my favorite. Every herbalist is like, my favorite. How you possibly choose a favorite is really hard. But if I had to choose a single herb maybe that was such a workhorse in my practice, it's chamomile. And it's so, I think, sometimes overlooked and underrated for being just this gentle, you know, people think of chamomile tea as like, oh, I just, you know, just a pleasure tea you'd have before bed once in a while or something like that. But it actually is a really powerful medicine. And I love using it as a tea for sure, or as a liquid extract. And it can just be put into some water or some hot water or just taken on its own. It's so safe. And, you know, can be given to children up to the elderly, you know, very, very few risks involved, especially when it comes to drug interactions and such. So it just has such a calming influence on the nervous system. It's so immediately grounding and has this really great double action on being a powerful anti-inflammatory and carminative. So really targeting the nervous system as well as the digestive system. And I think, you know, as you probably know, most people with carry a lot of stress in their bodies, one of the first places they feel it is in their gut. So that picture, which is so common, chamomile just suits so beautifully. And and most people really enjoy it, which is nice too, because as you know, most of our herbs don't taste great, that it's nice to have a medicine that people can enjoy. And then I would say another herb that I like to use, very similar in some of those things I mentioned about chamomile, is holy basil. And holy basil, a beautiful flavor to it, really calming, really nourishing, nervine tonic. So, you know, think more of a nervine tonic, whereas chamomile might be more of a nervine relaxant that it doesn't necessarily make you sleepy. It's another thing misunderstood about chamomile is like you can drink chamomile. Most people can drink chamomile all day long and it's not going to make them feel sleepy. If you want it at the end of the day, it'll help you feel relaxed, but it doesn't have like a sedating effect. It's just a really nice, gentle, relaxing effect. And most people need that when they're stressed throughout their day. It's something to calm them down, but not impact their energy too much either, right? So yeah, holy basil has that wonderful property too, as well as another favorite of mine, another nervine tonic for stress, which is skullcap. And it's a Scutellaria lateriflora, which is, there's another Scutellaria bicalensis, Chinese bicol, that is a different type of skullcap. But the skullcap that I'm referring to has a very long traditional use for stress, tension, especially people who hold a lot of tension within their musculature. So, and particularly it has this traditional affinity towards people who hold tension in their jaw and in their shoulders and in their necks, like that's so many of us now on computers and such. So that's another really effective, really gentle herb. So those three, and actually what I'll just mention I love about those three herbs too, is they can easily be grown at home. And it's a really great herb to have people just plant a little pot of if they can somewhere in their garden or in their house. They usually thrive really well and can build a connection with the plant that way. And you can even harvest it yourself and make a medicine yourself that way if people are feeling so inclined. So I really love those. Yeah. So those are my three for stress that I find really, really useful in my practice. And using them, they can be used in any form as a tea, as a tincture, or taken in a tablet. They're all going to be equally effective. It's really about just meeting the patient where they're at and what their preference is going to be, but all equally effective in my experience.
Wonderful. And I love this because some of these herbs are ones that you might not commonly hear about. So chamomile, holy basil, skullcap, some of these, you know, very unique herbs. And, you know, while we were going through this, I know you were talking about, you know, nervine tonic, carminative. Can you talk a little bit about the language of herbalism? Because it sounds like, you know, you're really, you know, deep diving into some terms that maybe our listeners haven't heard before.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's a really good reference you can find also just as a shout out on holisticmatters.com that breaks down each of the terminology that's used, basically used to group different herbal actions together. So we refer to this group of herbs called the Nervine Tonics. These are traditionally herbs that would strengthen the nervous system, whatever that might mean. Sometimes that might mean, you know, through you know, adding a little bit more resiliency within the nervous system. There's a lot of overlap between the herbs that we call nervine tonics, either way, like, and adaptogens, which also are obviously incredibly important in stress, and would be often I'm using adaptogens, and most people know about adaptogens and what they are, but these are a group of herbs that we know can help support our body's stress response, particularly via the HPA axis and improving the body's ability to utilize cortisol, largely is what they do. And adaptogens and the Nervine Tonics pair really beautifully together. I'm often in my clinical practice using them together. So a classic adaptogen that I'm using all of the time is ashwagandha, which I'm sure many people out there have some experience with. You know, it's a herb that it's amazing how it's grown in popularity for good reason. That is a herb that if I have to see a stress picture and that person is also experiencing insomnia, I love giving ashwagandha before bed, a few hours before bedtime, to help lower cortisol levels. That's what ashwagandha kind of does best, is lower cortisol levels. So yeah, those adaptogens are largely working on modulating cortisol, sometimes, you know, bringing it up, bringing it down, some bouncing out. And then Nervine Tonics are herbs that will often work on strengthening resiliency within the nervous system and improving mood. So if we're experiencing, again, ups and downs in our mood, whether it's anxiety or depression, I'd say that's when Nervine Tonics are most indicated. And then Nervine Relaxants, and there is lots of overlap here, by the way. I don't want mean to say each herb fits really neatly into each category. There is overlap. But the Nervine Relaxants are going to be herbs that have a slightly more sedating effect. And, you know, sometimes that can just be adjusting the dose would make a herb more relaxed. So if I, you know, common Nervine Relaxant for insomnia that I might use would be valerian. A little bit of valerian has a mild effect on, you know, mildly relaxing effect. A lot of valerian is probably going to put that person to sleep. So dosing obviously will also impact how the herb will act within the body as well. Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. We can talk about too, but actions on the digestive system, like carminatives, and that I can happily discuss as we kind of talk about some other conditions as well.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, I love that you're highlighting, you know, this different terminology. I think, you know, there's always a unique terms associated with different professions, and this just herbalism really has these unique terms that I think are worth learning, because as you mentioned, you know, herbs, there's a lot of overlap. It's not one condition, one herb. That's not how this works. There's a lot of nuances, yeah, and places where we need to make sure that we're treating our patient as a whole as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, some other conditions I think that are out there that we see in clinical practice quite often, hormonal concerns. So are there a unique set of herbs that you pick from with, you know, hormonal issues, you know, PMS or PCOS or just kind of other conditions? And what herbs might you choose in those instances?
Mm-hmm, for sure. So I see a lot of hormonal imbalances, you know, I'm sure many of us do, across all different ages, you know, but absolutely during that, you know, that we see, I see I treat a lot of premenstrual syndrome, a lot of perimenopause, and then, you know, menopausal symptoms, and each of those stages can benefit from kind of different herbal protocols. But there are some just tried and true herbs that often we're looking at a group of plants that contain, that will have hormonal modulating effects. And this can include the adaptogens, and often does. And I those are a real base group of herbs that I'm looking at using too. But I'm often trying to use herbs that contain phytoestrogens, and we can have a big chat about phytoestrogens that I don't have time for today, but these are herbs that can help modulate estrogen activity and estrogen receptor activity, like the affinity of our endogenous estrogen and its activity at estrogen receptors. And that can be used in conjunction with herbs like chaste tree, which is like the, you know, the big one. We look at hormonal balances, particularly balancing estrogen in women. And it's not a phytoestrogenic herb. In fact, chaste tree is a herb that acts on the pituitary and has a different mechanism of action that can have a greater impact on things like prolactin and dopamine levels, particularly, and that downstream can affect progesterone and estrogen activity. But chaste tree is a key herb for any sort of premenstrual picture, particularly irregular menstrual cycles. People who are having fluctuations, large fluctuations in their estrogen relative to progesterone levels. Usually we're seeing more of an estrogen dominant type picture in those patients that would make chaste tree top of mind for me. I think chaste tree is incredibly important, has been really useful in menopausal patients, which is sometimes overlooked as well, because people are just kind of thinking about declining estrogen levels, but declining progesterone in menopause is really important for a lot of symptoms that are presenting during that time. And I really love using chaste tree in menopause, particularly. Menstrual cramping, there's good research for chaste tree in all of these areas. So that's a for sure one that I'm using a lot. And then maybe a lesser one that people are thinking about using that I always try to incorporate at least a couple times a year is liver support in any sort of hormonal imbalance. So herbs like milk thistle, Schizandra I love because not only is it hepatoprotective, which is basically a herb that can support liver detoxification and reduce inflammation within the liver, it also is phytoestrogenic, so it has some hormone modulating effects. And it's really incredible how much a little cleanup of the diet, a little kind of detoxification protocol, and some targeted liver support can be towards making big shifts in these hormonal pictures. I'm not sure if that's something maybe I know in your practice you've seen a lot of patients with hormonal issues as well, something that you've noticed too perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you're bringing up supporting the liver. I think sometimes this goes, you know, we're just supporting hormones or increasing or decreasing. And now there's this hormone replacement therapy strategy that you'll hear a lot about. And it's just about hormone modulation. And I love that you brought up working on the liver as well. And you're maybe doing that a couple times throughout the year. Can you talk a little bit more about that? What's your rationale behind supporting the liver with somebody with some maybe hormones that are dysregulated?
Yeah, so we obviously know the liver is such an important organ for so many things, but particularly in eliminating potentially especially harmful estrogens. I like to think about the processes that happen, the metabolic processes happening within those liver cells, and upregulating various enzyme systems within the liver to allow for greater clearance of those often estrogen we're looking at there. And then I think it's also really important, not only are we're optimizing the activity of, we're learning more too, and Carrie Bone does a great job talking about the importance of, NRF2 activators and all of these herbs that we're learning about that have powerful hepatoprotective properties that we've used for centuries, we're seeing now have really powerful NRF2 activation properties too. So we're getting this just like powerhouse effect on decreasing inflammation in the liver, basically allowing the liver to do everything that it does better. And so, yeah, that just makes such a difference. And particularly, I want to say in that population of people who might have been on hormonal forms of birth, like medications, birth control, things like that, or just lots of medications that have maybe added, or a toxic burden that has put a lot of extra work on their livers. These are people who particularly benefit from this. And, you know, you could take hepatoprotective herbs, when I say a couple times a year, like I'm talking about doing a targeted detox protocol a couple times a year, because that's really practical for most people. You could take hepatoprotective herbs all the time and that would be fantastic. But I think a lot of patients, it really works, or at least has worked in my practice, to give them this sort of doable, 4 to 6 week protocol in the spring is nice, and kind of in the fall during these changing seasons where we're working together to optimize their nutrition, their you know, lifestyle habits, and then having herbs come on in to do some extra activity there, which is really how herbs always work best and is a really important piece when I talk about herbs in clinical practice. They're never being used on their own. They're always being used alongside the right dietary modifications, limiting, you know, the bad guys, sugar, caffeine, alcohol, food intolerances, and always kind of incorporating other nourishing things for our body, whether that's time in nature or mindfulness practices or exercise, whatever it might be. So that's an important part too, is giving our bodies all the good stuff that it needs and focusing on that a couple times a year, as opposed to maybe, you know, expecting us to be able to live up to those standards all year long. Most people I've found, at least in my practice, appreciate that. Yeah, we do our best. We all do our best. That's all we can do, right?
And I bet that really helps with compliance as well, because, you know, I don't know about you, but, you know, my patients, you know, sometimes get overwhelmed with taking, you know, certain supplements or protocols for extended periods of time. So I think that really helps with compliance, making sure to incorporate that liver detoxification just a couple times a year. And patients are usually able to manage that well.
For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, switching gears here for a moment, we talked at the beginning about chamomile and the carminative property. So what about more on digestion? Because I know this is another really common complaint. And I think a lot of people come in with digestive issues. So can you talk about some herbs that might be beneficial for our digestion?
Absolutely. Yeah, this is huge. And cornerstone is going to be addressing diet, of course. Remember, we can't just like pop a herb or a pill or anything and not address our diet and expect our digestion to improve. But stress, like I've had many cases where people are experiencing, you know, chronic ongoing nausea, like debilitating nausea and indigestion that has resolved simply by addressing stress and anxiety and using the Nervine tonics and adaptogens, like not really doing any of those like digestive herbs. I'm doing air quotes here, but like digestive herbs that we would lump into that group. So that piece is so important. What I love about herbs for digestion, the kind of digestive herbs, is they act so quickly, like scary quickly, like in a way that not scary, wonderfully quickly, but in a way that I think people don't always expect herbs to work, or they just, you know, and a lot of our herbs do take time, especially when we're looking at hormonal change, making hormonal changes and adapting to stress and all of that can take months sometimes. Whereas these herbs for digestion, which yeah, we often will refer to them as carminatives, they can work almost immediately to help improve symptoms of gas, bloating, indigestion, heartburn. And carminatives herbs are usually going to be quite high in volatile oils. And volatile oils are just, they're the parts of plants that make them aromatic, make them smell often, most of the time really lovely, sometimes really not so lovely. But often they're going to be what makes, you know, what makes chamomile chamomile, or what makes lavender lavender, you know, those herbs that, yeah, those aromatic properties are so powerful, and they basically act as smooth muscle relaxants within the digestive tract and elsewhere, but definitely within the digestive system. They're highly anti-inflammatory. They're often antimicrobial as well. So if you're dealing with, these are herbs that you might use in high doses for infectious conditions of the GI tract too. But yeah, herbs that are high in volatile oils, which you know right away just by smelling them that they would be. And then herbs that are high in mucilage, which is another component, a really important part of licorice, and specifically DGL or deglycerated licorice, which is so effective and something I use for particularly heartburn. It works almost immediately. And so that in combination with these carminative herbs, some other herbs like meadowsweet is a beautiful herb that has quite a high amount of salicylates or salicin compounds that are what aspirin is derived for. So it has like a highly anti-inflammatory and a little bit of analgesic effect. can lower stomach acid as well. So, you know, yeah, that group of herbs just is so beautiful, so fast acting, can be taken in the moment to help with those symptoms. And then, of course, we look to bitters, which are incredibly useful for helping on lots of levels. You know, we're still learning. It's amazing what we're uncovering, just how much bitters do, and that these bitter receptor sites are, you know, largely within the GI tract, but also found all throughout the body. So thinking about herbs like gentian, wormwood, feverfew, really bitter, awful tasting stuff, but herbs that have a very long traditional use, often given as like an aperitif, like a beverage that you would consume before your meals to help prime the body's ability to digest those foods. So bitters as a grouping of herbs and carminatives as a grouping of herbs are just mainstays for treating digestion. Bitters often before food, carminatives often after. And again, form of taking it doesn't, I think, make too much of a difference, whether you take it as a tablet, a tea, or a liquid extract, whatever that patient's preference is going to be. But I've had lots of fun, hosted a few dinner parties where we do pairing our beverages with our meals, and we're doing like fun, really bitter cocktails before and a really lovely carminative tea after our meal. And fennel is a kind of a top herb, I would think, that encompasses a lot of, and ginger too, two big herbs that I think are really, have this strong affinity towards nourishing the digestive system.
So that's just fascinating information. And really what I learned from that is I would love to be invited to your next dinner party. That sounds that sounds amazing.
Would love to have you.
And so
we do some really fun infused wines too, just so you know.
That is right up my alley. And so I wanted to bring this, back into the homes of our listeners and really talk about what are some of the things that, our listeners can do at home with herbs. I know you've mentioned, you know, growing them and taking them in terms of teas, which I think is really common in chamomile. But what about culinary herbs, and what about some other things that, practically people can do in their homes and kind of have an experience with herbs?
Yeah, so I'm so happy you mentioned culinary applications of herbal medicine. That's something, an area that I really love playing with and discussing. And bringing herbs into people's homes is something I try to do with every patient. So even as a practitioner, we should always be trying to find ways that people can incorporate more herbs into their daily lives, and how better to do that than with our food, because we have to eat every single day. So but I give a lot of patient handouts for recipes or, things that I hope that they will take with them outside of just, the herbal prescription that I'm writing for them that day. And obviously the herbs that I would be encouraging people to use at home are going to be ones with a very long history of safe use, that are using them for like mild, everyday complaints from home for themselves and for their families, and can be done safely. But yeah, some favorites of mine, gosh, I love, so coming back to that group of herbs called the carminatives, these are herbs that we can take advantage of those aromatic, the yummy aromatic properties of some of those herbs that translate so well into our cooking. So we think about ginger and garlic. Onion is like a powerful medicine and is at in everybody's kitchen right now. I love, making something like fire cider. If you're familiar with that, fire cider is a really old folk medicine for supporting our immune systems and our digestion. It's essentially adding garlic, onion, ginger, some cayenne, and really anything else you want. But those are, I would say, the mainstays, into apple cider vinegar and letting that sit and macerate for a few weeks. And it makes this really, I think, delicious tonic that you can just, if you like taking a shot of apple cider vinegar a day, you're gonna step up your game with fire cider. So that's one of my favorite kind of home remedies. It's great during cold and flu season, if you have poor circulation, it's really warming to the whole of the circulatory system and the digestive system. Not great for somebody with heartburn, but other than that, it's one of my faves. And then I think bitter foods, you know, thinking more about adding bitter foods to our diet, radicchio, arugula, a couple drops of any, almost any herbal tincture on your tongue before a meal, really, really helpful. Fennel seed, I love just a couple seeds, chewing or sucking on a couple fennel seeds after a meal, particularly fatty meals for gas and bloating and indigestion, so, so helpful. I am a big fan of mushrooms and, including more mushrooms into our cooking. We know about all the amazing medicinal properties of mushrooms, like, you know, cordyceps and lion's mane and reishi and shiitake and cremini, particularly those brown mushrooms, not so much the white, and definitely organic is what you want to be buying there. But there have been, there's a really awesome amount of research that's come out in the past couple of years looking at just a couple of cups of cooked mushrooms a week, reducing odds of, neurological conditions and having, even I saw one recently about reducing the odds of having mild cognitive impairment, so progression towards dementia, by up to 50% by just a cup. These participants were followed by eating just a cup or two, even just a cup of cooked mushrooms a week, which is pretty amazing. So I love putting those into people's lives and kitchens just as preventative medicine. And I definitely, I have lots of other little kitchen favorites and remedies and things like that that I could share. I don't want to go on and on, but I use a lot of garlic in my kitchen. Infusing in honey is something I love to do too. Great for kids. A garlic infused honey is powerful antimicrobial, both topically and internally. Those are some of my favorite home remedies. And I love elderberry too. I make an elderberry syrup, especially as I'm a newish mom a mom new to putting a toddler in school during winter time. So I'm experimenting with a lot of immune formulas, and I'm using a lot of elderberry and making elderberry syrup in my kitchen and elderberry popsicles, and finding ways to get echinacea in my children that are creative, because that's a really hard taste to mask. Those would be some of my faves. And then another big topic that I could talk on about is just first aid applications. So having a little herbal home first aid kit, if you could have one herb on hand, it would be calendula. And calendula is just that like workhorse of a wound healer that so many cuts, scrapes, bruises, I love infusing it into oils, just like olive oil or other kind of salves, but very easy to make a salve or an ointment by just melting some beeswax into an oil. It's great in the bath. Just lots of applications for that herb. Also so gentle, so safe across any age. So those would be some of the big ones that come to my mind.
And I love that this really, our listeners can really be herbalists in their own home. I mean, you talked about using things that are probably found in our kitchens right now, mushrooms, garlic, onion, kind of some infused honey, making this fire cider. I love all of those because we have control over that and kind of the food that we bring into our home. I did want to ask you about spices as well. So, I know there's a lot of spices that we can use kind of in food preparation and there are herbs as well, which sometimes we don't think about. So do you have any favorite spices that you might recommend? And do they have any properties, herbal properties that we might want to be aware of?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. So 100%, most people don't think about their kitchen cabinet as being a medicine cabinet, but it can be. You do, I would say, it needs to be more than just, a little sprinkle on top of our, a little bit of oregano or basil or whatever it might be on top of your casserole to reach real therapeutic quantities. You've got to taste it. Also, a lot of people's spice cabinets, the spices have been sitting there for a while. And if you basically, you need to open up those spices, those bags or bottles or whatever you have, and give them a good sniff. And if it doesn't kind of hurt your nose, it probably has lost a lot of its medicinal content. The longer it sits in a shelf on a drawer, you know, those volatile compounds will get lost. And that's where a lot of the medicine is. So that's important to consider. But ones that big workhouses in my cabinet would be cinnamon. I use a lot of cinnamon and I double up whatever the recipe calls for. I'm with my powdered cinnamon, especially for baked goods. Every spice is going to have really potent anti-inflammatory properties. Again, as long as it's fresh and you're using good quality and you're using enough of it. But yeah, cinnamon, I just love. We know, you know, it has potentially some properties on blood sugar regulation as well. I use a lot of ginger. I use it in savory and sweet cooking, breads and things like that. I do use a lot of oregano. I use a lot of cumin, and all of those herbs are going to have that, those volatile oils. So those carminative, relaxing properties on the digestive system. A nice kitchen tool to have as well is a mortar and pestle. If you really want to have really fresh herbs and get all the activity out of those volatile oils, buy fennel seed whole and then give it a crush right before you use it. Coriander, same thing, and another really, really big workhorse in my kitchen. I love to add it to our cooking. And then infusing, just try to always add a little bit extra of a spice or a herb to everything you're eating and just see what happens to your eggs, to your vegetables, to your rice, to your pasta, whatever it might be. I always say if a recipe calls for garlic, always double it or triple it. You know, we should just be maximizing. Our food tastes better that way and we're getting more of the potential beneficial effects that way too.
I love that. And thanks for bringing up, you know, the therapeutic dosing. I think that's something that when we're talking to patients about, they say, oh yeah, you know, I added a couple sprinkles of this or that. And some, you know, some patients might do well using it kind of in supplementation, right? So they're taking their liquid extract or they're taking their herbal tea and then maybe doing a little bit just in spice form, because sometimes it is a bit challenging to tolerate massive amounts of
for sure.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, absolutely.
Yeah.
So you've experienced that as well. Well, yeah,
for sure.
Well, what a wonderful conversation. I mean, we could go on and on, and there's so much more we could talk about, you know, with herbal medicine. You know, we touched on a few key herbs today, but I just want to thank you so much for this conversation and bringing us into your kitchen and your dinner parties and teaching about some of the medicinal properties of these herbs and what you use in clinical practice. So thank you so much, Marisa. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, it was my pleasure, Dana. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I really appreciate it. And you're welcome anytime at my kitchen or people.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Medicinal Herbs Podcast from Holistic Matters. For more on medicinal herbs, including those for stress, hormones, and digestion, visit holisticmatters.com. That's holistic with a W.